guys, we're starting Parshas Vayikra, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're going to be talking. I said we're going to talk about the north, and it really deals with the entire Parsha. It's all over the Parsha. V'shochat osol yerech ha-mizbeach tzafonu l'vnei Hashem. You shek the korban by the side of the mizbeach in the north, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'zorku b'nei Aaron ha-kohanim izdemol mizbeach saviv. And then the b'nei Aaron, the kohanim, they go ahead and sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach all the way around. Now, I wrote on your pages, if you have the pages in front of you, there is a little picture of the Beis HaMikdash over here. If you look toward the right-hand side, right over there, that is going to be the Heichal with the little rooms on the side right next to it. You see the Mizbeach is the white thing with the ramp in that way. Where they sacrificed, what we're talking about when it comes to the north is, this is the way it is. This is the west. The western wall is right here, meaning that's the Kotel, what we have today. Right over here is the east. And that means that if we have this is north, this is south. So the bottom of your Beis HaMikdash is going to be the north. Where they sacrificed, where they brought their korbanos, was north of the Mizbeach. In those little areas where you see the hooks, you can barely see the hooks inside there. But that little area with the hooks, that's where they ended up shechting it. So here's the deal. When you walked into the Beis HaMikdash, you walked in from the east facing the west. That was the normal way to get in. North is on your right. South is on your left. That's the way it was. You walked straight through the Ezras Nashim. You came to the Shari Nicanor, the gate of Nicanor. You went into the Ezras Yisrael. After the Ezras Yisrael was the actual Azara. In the Azara, there was a huge Mizbeach Ola. The Mizbeach Ola is 32 by 32 amos. The ramp is 32 by 32 amos. That was how big it was. That was more toward my left. As I'm walking in, going through Shari Nicanor, you saw the Mizbeach somewhat in front of me. It's a machlokis in the Mishnayos, but somewhat in front of me, a little bit toward that way. On this side, the north side of the Mizbeach, is where they sacrificed the korbanos, and that's where they also stripped off, they took off the skin, and then hung them up on the hooks, ready to be able to do everything else they needed to do over there. Fine. That's where the Korban Ola, the Korban Chatos, and the Korban Asham were shechted and everything was done with. The Kachim Kalim, which is Shlamim, the Korban Pasach, the Toda, any Korban that had to do with the Shlamim that was considered a Shlamim could be sacrificed anywhere in that area, but that's not a problem. This is also known, the north is also known as Lifnei Hashem for an obvious reason. If I'm looking straight ahead and I see the opening of the Heichal right there in front of me, and the Mizbeach is right over here, they shecht it on the north of the Mizbeach that was right in front of the doors leading to the Heichal, leading to the Menorah, the Mizbeach, Mizbeach Azov, the Shulchan, as well as the Aron Kodesh itself. This is an area, says the Chizkuni, where there were not so many people walking around. The Kohanim were busy on the south side, taking care of the limbs, bringing it up on the Mizbeach, burning everything on the Mizbeach. They were on top, doing everything they needed to do. But down below, that place was open just to be able to line, to be able to shecht and to be makabel the blood. This is all explained in Zvachim Daf Nun Testament Aleph. So that is our introduction as to what we're dealing with over here. So why the north? Why do they have to do it in the north? Granted, this is a great spot for it. It's wide open. But why not move the Mizbeach over a little bit and sacrifice in the south? Why not do it a little bit closer to the Ezras Yisrael? Do it a little bit more toward the east? Why not do it in the west on both sides of the Heichal? Why is it done specifically in the north and why is it there? So the Baal HaTurim brings this down to something amazing. And he says, it's for protection. This is all for protection from the powers of Tuma that come from the north. Yirmiyahu says in Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Aleph, Mitzafon Tiposach HaRoah, that the evil stems from the north. We say one of the names of the Yetzer Hara is Tzfoni. It's as if he lives in the north. That's what the Yetzer Hara is called. He's called that by Yoel. Yoel said he's known as Tzfoni. So it's a reference. When we say we sacrifice in the north, it's to knock out the powers of Tuma, to take care of the Yetzer Hara and say as if we're knocking him out, we're throwing him out, we're shechting specifically in there, in his, so to speak, area, and getting rid of him. Now, we know the Rambam says in Mori Nevuchim, he says the reason for all korbanos is to knock down the ways of the other nations. They used to believe that the cow, the sheep, and the goats were gods. Cows were the gods of the Indians. The sheep were the gods of the Mitzrayim, as we all know. And goats were the gods of the people who lived in Europe. That is Shem, Chom, and Yafes, if anybody's checking it out. Chom were the sheep. shame the Semitic people. That was India. That was the cows and the goats. That was Yefes. That's all the way on the other side. That's shame Chum and Yefes. Says the Rambam, we specifically take their gods, everything that they hold near and dear, their cows, their sheep, their goats, what they think are idols, what they think are so great, and we sacrifice those things to our God, as if to say they're worth nothing. These things don't mean anything to us, and we could care less about them. That's how the Rambam says it. So it makes sense now. If the whole point of korbanos is to get rid of that evil and to destroy all those things that are out there, then it makes sense now, says the Rambam. This idea, at least, the Rambam doesn't say this, but for us, why we shecht in the north. The whole point of korbanos is to get rid of tumah. So if that's so, if the whole point is that, then I get it. Let's shecht in the north to get rid of the concept of what tumah stands for. That's the idea. I completely get it, according to the Rambam. The Ramban, earlier, in Parshas Kisisa, mentions a whole thing about the Egel Azov. He says the reason why the Egel Azov was made, maybe you know this Ramban, maybe you've heard this before, it's a famous Ramban. The reason why the Egel Azov was made is because Bnei Yisrael were in a desert, an isolated and desolate area where there was absolutely nothing there. These areas, the desert areas, are ruled by Midas HaDin, by the Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is known as strict justice. That's the area that they were in charge of. That's what they were in charge of. This is through what we call something called Hester Panim, where God, so to speak, hides his face, doesn't allow himself to be there. It's as if allowing the evil to show itself and form in this world. Here's the pshat. Evil stems from the north. And in some way, again, this is stuff that's a little bit beyond my pay grades. I'm not going to be able to fully understand this. When the Bnei Yisrael looked up at Kriyas Yamsuf and at Har Sinai, they saw up in the heavens the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On that Kisei, there are four pictures. The four pictures are one of an Adam, one of a Nesher, an eagle, one of an Aryeh, and one of, somewhat, a shore slash a kruv. On the north side of the Kisei HaKavod, the north side, there is a shore. When the people looked up and saw the Kisei HaKavod, they understood that when things are going well, we have an Adam, Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Ramban, when things are going badly, we have a goring ox. That stands for Midas HaDin. It's the idea of what the Satan should be. So when they saw things were going well, we had Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu is gone, we have an Egel Azov. That was the concept, says the Ramban, why they created an Egel. Because they saw they needed something, and they're no longer working with Rachamim, they're working with Midas HaDin, with the strict judgment of God. They need the Egel to be able to take that place. And again, the pshat is that the Egel, the shore, is on the north side. This is their tumah, this is their power, so to speak, of the other side. So we specifically take our korban, put it in the north, and we say, no, they don't have any power. It's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We give everything back to God, so to speak. We're trying to say it's all His. That's the concept. So the Rambam and the Ramban would agree with this idea, put it in the north to knock out their power, get rid of the power of tumah that's out there. But I think it's a bigger idea. Again, this is getting into bigger things. The Rabbeinu Bechai explains the north. And I think I somewhat get it. I just don't fully get it. If you look at every place in the world, water surrounds it completely. Right? In other words, in theory, right, North America and South America are surrounded by water. They all have mechitzas. It's surrounded by something. So too with Asia, Europe, Africa. Everything is surrounded by water. In fact, it's a famous thing that, you know, Manhattan is famous that they can't have an Eruv. I'm not getting into politics, and they might have an Eruv now, but they wouldn't be able to have an Eruv. Now, why? They're surrounded by water. It's an island. How can an island not have an Eruv? Now, granted, there's a lot of people there, but that's already, you're getting into a famous Reb Schwab and Parshas Vayakhel, a famous Reb Moshe and the Igros Moshe, why Manhattan is impossible to have an Eruv, even though it's surrounded already by a very valid, very legitimate wall, bridges, everything, whatever, regardless. The whole world is surrounded by water. Water surrounding it turns it into, that's like four walls, which makes it into a Reshus HaYachid. A Reshus HaYachid is something in which we say if there's a suffix tumah in Reshus HaYachid, a doubt, I don't know if there's tumah here or not, we're more makel. Reshus HaYachid, we're more makel. In Reshus HaRavim, however, that's where tumah lies. It finds itself there in Rosh Hashanah, where it's a public area, as if nobody owns it, nobody has anything shaykhis to it. That's where Tumah finds itself, in some place that's out there. Now, here's the pshat, and again, it's not exactly, but it's the idea. Up north is the only place in the world where there's less water than land. And what I mean is, look up north, you have Alaska and Canada, going all the way to Greenland, going all the way to, I guess you could say, the top of England, and then Scandinavian, you know, the Scandinavian sort of like out there, to Russia, all the way to Alaska again. Now I know, I realize, there are waterworks that go through there. The Atlantic Ocean does go through Greenland and Canada, and through Greenland and England, obviously. There is the North Sea, there's no question. In between, there's the Bering Strait, in between Alaska and Russia, I realize that. But it is the one place in the world where there is almost, very, very close to being, a strip of land all the way around, as if there's nothing covering it, nothing being a mechitza around it. So the concept is, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, he's the one that says it, that up north, it's just land all the way around, it's a Rishus HaRabim. It's not blocked by anything. It's not a protected area. In a Rishus HaRabim, there's Tuma. The Tuma flows from that area. The Tuma surrounds that area. So to speak, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, that area is exactly where Tuma stems from. That's where it starts from. That's where it comes from. And it's not a coincidence that when we have in Eretz Yisrael, when Eretz Yisrael was always worried about their enemies, they're worried about their enemies from the north. The enemies from the north were Bavel, you know, technically Bavel is a little bit east, but they have to come from the north. They're worried about their enemies in Yavon and in Edom. Those concepts are that they're coming from the north to destroy them. Sure, there are enemies in the south. There's Mitzrayim in the southwest. There's Edom in the south. But Yirmiah is specifically trying to say, and this is the idea, Mitzafon, from the north is when you're worried about evil. Why? Because that's where evil stems from. So to speak, that's where the Shadim start from, where the Mazikin start from. How exactly that works? There's a Rabbeinu Bachaya here. You can check it out over here. I don't quite get it. But the concept, the idea, I sort of get. It's like a three-legged chair. The fourth leg is the north that needs a little bit of help. The korbanos are there to strengthen that fourth leg, that north side that is closed off, so to speak, and does not have a mechitza, that is not surrounded by a wall. That fourth wall needs the korbanos to strengthen it and allow it to become a little bit more tahor. Again, I'm going into things that are way beyond me, but this is the idea. Dave, what were you going
to
say? So I was thinking, yeah, but then you have to go to the Antarctica in the south. You hear what I'm saying? Yeah, if you use the Arctic Circle of Ice, then you can also go to the Antarctica Circle of Ice and the bottom in the south. So then there's no difference between the north and the south.
Well, I was going to get to that. Like, so yeah. If you go to the north, does that stop at the North Pole? Or does that go over to Russia?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. And that's why it gets a little confusing to me. Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz has a whole piece on this. Not here, but somewhere else. And he just goes through, he explains how even after Pangaea, before, you know, after the world already had separated, nonetheless, up north was always connected. And they say, even the scientists say, that at one point that's how all these animals came to America, right? Because they all went through what's now the Bering Strait. It was connected between Alaska and Russia, and they came down. What? The Aleutian Islands are, yeah, but it's not totally connected. But yeah, the basic idea. So however that could have happened, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz explains that in the terms of how the Mabul worked. It was an unbelievable Rabbi Yonasan that tries to explain things, but either way, regardless, a little bit more than what I know. So let's go into Pshat. If we've just given the esoteric reason that's where all Tuma stems from, and Tuma stems from the north, and everything's evil up there, and it goes through, in Pshat, why the north? What does it mean in Pshat? How do you apply? So who do you go to for somebody in Pshat when you want to explain something like this? You got to know this. Come on. Who would I go to?
Sam Sofer.
No. Sam Sofer is definitely not Pshat. That is definitely going to be Medrash, Medrash, Remez, Sod, as much as you can get. I'm not going to Rambam either, because the Rambam technically won't talk about this. I'm going to Rav Hirsch. You got to go to Rav Shamsher Fall Hirsch. No one's going to explain Pshat as well as Rav Hirsch is going to explain Pshat. He says, this is what the North stands for. North represents selfishness in the material sense. Why? Guys, we're going back to the base of Mikdash. We're in the Heichal. As you go into the Heichal itself, the Kodesh. What was in the Kodesh? What was in the Heichal itself? The first thing you met up with is the Mizbeach Hazav. Now there's, again, the north and the south. What's on this side? What's on this side? Menorah's on this side. The Shulchan's on this side. We all know Menorah stands for Chachma. And Shulchan stands for Gashmias. The north side stands for your physicality, in which a person is selfish, wanting more and more in Gashmias. That's what the north stands for. So when you go into the north, we're talking about something that's selfishness. The Shulchan, the center for Parnassah, was therefore in the north to be able to tell you. That's the Gashmias, that's the domain. Now the Shulchan was using your Gashmias for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, giving up of your Gashmias to God, that the lechem upon him was something that shouldn't have had any taste, should have been cold and stale. It's bread that was sitting there for a week and yet was still hot and warm, because when you give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your bread, your parnasa, is solid and everything's good. When you bring a korban, says Rav Hirsch, you're saying to Hashem, I recognize you're in charge of my parnasa. Now I know we're looking at this and like, what's the big deal in bringing a korban? People, granted, a sheep and a goat. A goat nowadays, you want to go buy a goat, you can buy a goat for $100. Easy. You want to get a good deal on a goat, you can go online, you can get them for $70. You'll be able to get them. And that's what people in Yeshiva Kayetz did. And they bought goats and then they left them in the field right outside of Skokie Yeshiva for a week. And then they let them go in a forest outside. I did not call the cops on them. I probably should have, because I know the kid and I don't like the kid. So either way, but that's what happened. That's a goat. You want a sheep? A sheep is a little more expensive. A sheep is just a little more expensive. You can buy a sheep for $120. You want to buy a cow. You want to buy a cow to bring as a korban ola? You want to bring that as a korban? You're spending hundreds of dollars. Hundreds of dollars. That's what you're spending on a cow. That's a lot of money. And every time you sin, can you imagine? Guys, every time you didn't put on tefillin, you owe a cow as a korban ola. So if you didn't put on tefillin one morning, if you davened late one morning, if you davened late, you forgot to wake up for Sof Zman Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is a del raisa, and it has a set time. You daven late, you might have to bring a korban ola. So if you're bringing a korban ola every day, five times a day, right, this is a lot of money. This is a lot of money. Now, I'm not, because I'm a tzaddik and I'm davening. But for somebody here who might not be, I'm not going to stare at anybody in particular. I'm going to look straight at the camera, right? That's a korban ola. That's a lot. That's a cow every single time. There's a lot of guilty faces here, right? But in the end, right, that's what ends up being. So here's the idea, says Rav Hirsch. That's a good call, actually. It can be a calf. Depends on which kind. But either way, regardless, right, when you're saying you're surrendering your livelihood to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's what a korban is. A korban is not just a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice in that sense as well. You're sacrificing your material assets to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You're giving up your own to say, God, I know you're in charge, and I'm willing to give up my stuff to you. And even if you didn't do any sins, you should still bring korbanos. You're willing to say to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, my livelihood is not going to be affected adversely by giving this korban. That's how Rav Hirsch puts it over here. I know that I'm getting it from you. That's the idea. I had a story over here. It's not a great story. It's one of those classic stories that ends off like, see, you don't have to. It's one of those, you know, where a guy decided he was sitting and he was working and he said, you know what, I'm out. He heard a good speech. Right, he heard a speech that everything is based on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He said, I'm out. He said he's going to sit in the base medrash the entire time, and he's going to learn, he's just going to sit and do Tehillim, and he's going to learn a little bit. That's all he's going to do for the rest of his life. So of course, you know, his business partners and whatever it is are trying to get a hold of him. They call the house. The wife answers, you know, says, I don't know where he is. I had no idea. She goes to the shul. She finds him sitting and saying Tehillim. She's like, what are you, crazy? You can't, of course he didn't tell his wife. Why would you tell your wife that you're giving up your business forever, right? You wouldn't tell her that. So he sat down and said, Kodesh Baruch Hu will provide. I'm not going, because the end of the story is like the classic, like he became Revel Yashiv. Like that's not, I don't want to go through that type of a classic story that ends off like everything worked out well. No, it's definitely not me. I wish it was me. Then everything worked out well. I would be Revel Yashiv. That would be awesome. No, but that's the end of the story is like the classic one. But the concept is, conceptually, I believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me parnasa. It's not coming from my boss. It's not coming from my hard work. It's not coming from my own hands. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's giving it to me. And luckily, Hashem is allowing it to be through my hands, through what I'm doing. I'm able to get something from it. But I know that my parnasa is coming straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. According to this idea, I now think it makes a lot of sense why tzafon appears only by goat and sheep. Goats and sheep. It says it by tzon. There is no word tzafon by the bulls. It's true, by the bulls, by par, it has to be in the north. But it doesn't say the word tzafon by the bull. You know why? Because we're trying to convince ourselves the whole point of the north is to say to ourselves, I believe my parnassah is coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If I'm bringing a sheep or a goat, that means I don't really believe. I'm only willing to spend $100. I know my parnassah is coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but I'm running a little bit short this week. So I don't know if I'm going to give a full bull. I don't know if I'm going to give an entire, you know, a par to the base of Mikdash. If you're giving a par and you know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide for you, that I don't even need to tell you to do it in the north. Obviously, you know that that's using your parnassah in the best way. What's up, Jake?
So what I'm hearing is that it's saying you should spend
Spend money on korbanos versus tzedakah for the poor. There is no question you still have your chiyuvim of meiser. However, there is a concept that a korban stands for your bein adam lamakom. So if you have a choice between bringing, there are obviously chiyuvim of your korbanos, what korbanos you have to bring, and there are chiyuvim of tzedakah. But if you're going to ask me, as a shaila, should I give this money to the poor or bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to tell you, ask someone bigger. Because I'm not positive what I would tell you in that sense. Obviously, the answer that I'd want to give is give to the poor, right? But I'm not positive, because there are so many things that you gain by watching these korbanos, I'm not positive that's the entire correct answer. So either way, but this is the idea, the reverse answer says that how much you gain out of it. The idea is that you gain in the materialistic sense. Yeah.
From a Sephardi perspective, you have a lot of Sephardi sayings that you want to give money to the poor.
Yeah.
And any stucky you give, it's like, you know, it's God's money.
Got it, yeah.
So when you're saying, in this case, like, I'm going to give a bigger carbon than a...
I'm going to give something much bigger, yeah.
You're going to, you know, it's God's provided for you. But so too, you know, with Staka, it's like...
I get it, it's the exact same way. The question is, which one takes preference? That's the only question. Which one's up precedence, I should say. Which one takes precedence? I don't know. I have a feeling it would be tzedakah still. But nonetheless, there is that bein adam lamakom aspect that applies right here. It's a good question. I like the question. Yeah.
So you were saying how north represents something bad, mm-hmm. depending on what the idea. So with the Shvatim, why does Dun represent the north?
Shevet Dun is a classic one. Because of what he did in the north, that's almost perfectly example.
The south.
He originally was in the south, and he moved to the north. That's when he brought Pesel Micha up north. That's at the end of Shoftim. When they moved up north, they brought Pesel Micha with them. That's exactly it. The northernmost Shevet, Dun, was filled with Avodah Zarah. That's exactly the issue. That's almost exactly it. There's so many different other examples. He was in the south. He was, and he moved up because there wasn't enough room. There's Rav Victor Miller over here, a tremendous Rav Victor Miller. It's the same basic concept of Hirsch. That's why I'm not going to go into something over here. Now, the Shach, now we're getting into something a little bit more remezi. In other words, what's the hint by the north itself? The Shach says, this is referring to someone who sinned in his youth, and did not do tshuva at that time. When he got older, he started feeling like, you know what, maybe I should do something about it. And he wanted to do tshuva, work on himself, and bring himself back to a little bit better. Now, this is not tshuva shlema. We know that tshuva shlema, full tshuva, is when you do what? You get into that situation, with that person, with whatever, all those things right there in front of you, and you say no. That's tshuva shlema, where everything is equal. One time you did the sin, one time you didn't do the sin. That is absolute tshuva shlema. That's the best way to be able to go through. This isn't tshuva shlema. He can't be fully metakin his sin. But nonetheless, there is something here. He gave into his yetzahara. Remember we said yetzahara was the tzafon. Right? And it's not as lifnei Hashem as it is by the par. By the par, it doesn't say tzafon, it says lifnei Hashem. But over here, he did do tshuva privately. He did it in a good way, just a little bit late. That tshuva is good, but it's not as good. It's almost like a lower level, like a hidden level. And therefore, we say the word tzafon is not referring to the north. Tzafon is referring to you doing tshuva in a smaller fashion. So to speak, tzafun. As we're going to see in the Seder, right, where Tzafun is the hidden piece of the Afikomen, Tzafun, it's as if we are hidden, as if we're thrown down a little bit, knocked down a little bit. That's the Shach says. So too, by the way, a Baal Tshuva is different. Once a person does Tshuva, he is now hidden from the Mekatra given Shemayim. Think about what happens when you do Tshuva. Granted, Tshuva Me'ava is the best way. You turn your stuff into mitzvahs. But Tshuva Me'ir as well. You're hiding yourself from those people that are Mekatra given, from the accusers up there. The Teva by Noach protected him. It was as if he had done tshuva from whatever he possibly could have done wrong, and the Teva protected him. This is the concept of what a Baal Tshuva has. He is tzafun, saved, sort of like protected from those Mekad, the accusers in Shemayim, as if nothing can happen. And when a person does tshuva, that's what it's able to do. And that's the remez to tzafon. When I go and I bring a korban, I'm doing tshuva. When I go and I bring a korban, I'm saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me do something better. Tzafon is trying to say, this idea of that I am going to be hidden is, this is what it's going to be. I'm going to be hidden from anything bad. It's all going to work out well. Now, that makes a lot of sense according to the Ramban. The Ramban says the reason for korbanos is not to knock down the Odei Avodah Zarah. The Ramban asks the famous questions. If every Avodah Zarah is to knock down Avodah Zarah, is to knock down Avodah Zarah, if that's the whole purpose of a korban, to knock down Avodah Zarah, why would Adam bring a korban? Why would Noach have brought a korban when he came off the teva? There's no avodah zarah. Hevel and Kayin, why were they bringing korbanos? There's no avodah zarah. So many questions. The Ramban has four big kashas on the Rambam. And he says, here's why you bring a korban. You know what a korban is? A korban is when you sin, it's your animalistic nature taking over, ruling over your human side, and making you into an animal. So what do? You take out your animal, represented by an animal, and you shecht that animal. It's as if you're shechting yourself. You should feel like you're part of PETA when you see a korban being brought on the Mizbeach. How could an animal, an innocent animal, represent me? How could that be? You look at the blood that's being spilled as your blood. You see the skin being skinned as your skin. You see the korban being brought, the limbs being chopped up as your limbs being chopped up. And you see the korban itself being brought on the Mizbeach and burned as you're being burned. And in fact, there's arba misos over here. Arba misos. What are the arba misos? Well, the skila is taking the animal down and throwing it to the ground in order to get it ready. Obviously, sayif, hereg, is when you shech the animal itself, right? The strangulation also happens at that time that it can't breathe. And then sreifa, by putting it on top of the mizbeach. It's as if you're watching yourself get the arba misos bathed in, that you deserve for doing the sin that you had done. That's the concept, says the Ramban. And if so, says the Ksav Sofer, doing tshuva, working on yourself, bringing yourself back, allows you to have something completely different. Allows it to be that as if I am now protected from the evil that I was involved with. All the evil that was happening to me, that's the concept. And this way, such a brilliant shot. Here's what the Ksav Sofer says. The Akedah never needed to happen. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraminu, Shecht Yitzchak, and then he changed his mind at the very end. And he's like, nah, I'm good now. I know that you fear God and everything's all good. What's pshat? Is that really it? Like all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just changed his mind? What was it? And if he said it in the beginning, what is it? So Rashi has said, V'haleyu shom la'ola meant bring him up as an ola, but don't actually shecht him. Come on. V'haleyu throughout the Torah means bring him up, meaning shecht him and burn him as an ola. So what does that mean? What does it mean? What was Avraham Avinu told? Like, no, don't do it. Now I know that everything's okay. Because the pshat is, if the whole reason for korbanos is to think that you're there to shecht yourself, you feel that you're being shechted. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that Avraminu was shechting himself and being willing to offer the greatest thing that he owned, Yitzchak Avinu, his own child, was willing to do that, that accomplished everything that a korban represents. A korban represents seeing yourself as if you're being shechted. As soon as Avraminu was able to see that, everything took place exactly as it was. I'm sorry?
Oh,
so that's the famous kasha they ask in the Ramban, because there are shlomims and other ola nedavas that could be brought even though you didn't sin. That's the famous kasha on the Ramban. There is a ritva that answers that question. There is a meshech chokhmah that answers the question beautifully, and a kuzari. But it's not for right now. But yes, there are. It's a great question. That's exactly the question they all ask on the Ramban. They all ask that way.
What's the problem between bring kemach as a korban?
A mincha and an oaf is the question they ask. What about the oaf? What about the mincha? Both of those are asked as well. I am going to refer you guys to 5, 6, or 7 years ago. I gave a shiur on why we bring korbanos. It's in Parshas Vayikra, just rabbitzvizimmerman.com. I'm just telling you that you could go on there and go check it out yourself. But I did talk about it. I gave all the answers for all these questions. It's great questions. They're awesome questions. Those are 100%. Those are there. The Chidush Arim says it as well. No need to go into this. Chidush Arim is right there. But now, there's something even crazier that happens. And this is something I never even thought of, but it's a brilliant shot. Rabbi Yonis and Ibshitz brings this. And honestly, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, of course, this makes so much sense. There were two doors in the Beis HaMikdash. They were called Pishpashim. Honestly, I don't use articles. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly. But Peshin or Pesin. Peshin, Pesin, Yud Mem. So it's Pishpashim or Paspasim. I have absolutely no idea. But there were two doors, so to speak. It's mentioned in the Mishnayis of Mishnayis Tumid. One in the north and one in the south. So in the Beis HaMikdash again, you come in through the east. There were doors over here. But then there's one door in the north and one door in the south. The one in the south that's over here was very large and everyone was allowed to go through it. But the one in the north was very small and no one was allowed to come in that way. It corresponds to the Kisei HaKavod up above. The tzaddikim walk into the Kisei HaKavod, walk into Olam Haba, whatever you want to call it. You know, standing there in Olam Haba before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they all come in through those doors, because the tzaddikim, the accusers, the satan in Shemayim is looking there and saying, that guy deserves it, that guy deserves it, that guy deserves it. But what about the Baalei Tshuva? What about the people who sinned, who the accusers are going to look at and say, that guy doesn't deserve to go in? What happens there? So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? This is the remes, says Rabbi Yonasan. He picks them up underneath the ground, pulls them underneath the kisei, and throws them in through the little door on the north side. This little door that cannot be used in our world, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, is a reference to the back door in Shemayim, where he gets those Baalei Tshuva in. Now think about that for a second. We always have the line, B'makom shebaalei tshuva omdin, ein tzaddikim yichol lamod, right? If a Baal Tshuva gets there, a tzaddik can't get there. Come on, that's ridiculous. You mean to tell me, honestly, if somebody's greater than the Chazon Ish than Moshe Rabbeinu? Oh, how does that mean? How can a Baal Tshuva be there? And here's the pshat. Because the Chazon Ish and Moshe Rabbeinu are coming from here. They're coming from the south side. Granted, they go right up to the kisei. But the Baalei Tshuva are being pulled under the kisei and through the northern side by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The Baal Tshuva, in order to get around the Mekatrigim, is able to go through with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's permission. Through his permission, as if he's taking them right there. It's as if he's the one that's getting so close. And here's the pshat. Pishu li sharei tzedek, we say. Everybody knows this line from Hallel. Pishu li sharei tzedek, open up for me the gates of tzedek. That is the gate of the tzedek for those people who have done tshuva. Open up for me that gate so I can go in through tzidkus. Zeh ha'shar la'Hashem, tzadikim yavo'u vo. This is the gate for Hashem where the tzaddik can go through. There's tzaddikim that go through here, but pishu li sharei tzedek said the Baalei Tshuva can get in the other way. It's an unbelievable line, yeah.
Is this Baalei Tshuva Meira or Me'ava or both?
It doesn't say. I would assume both. I don't see why not.
But the ones that are Me'ava don't have to fear the Mekatrigan anymore because they're affairs that turned into mitzvahs.
They still did a sin at one point. So you're right. If they did pure Me'ava and there's nothing left, then you're right. They might be considered tzaddikim in that way. Yeah, that could be. Who is that?
I'm saying, there's nobody that's really not a Baal Tshuva.
I hear what you're saying. Like, why would there be anybody? Maybe that's where you come in. Maybe we're talking about Baalei Tshuva Meira, while the Baalei Tshuva Me'ava come in through that way. Maybe that's a good call. Maybe that's the way to be able to understand it. But this idea is such a crazy idea. Why do we sacrifice in the north? Because the north stands for what the Baalei Tshuva stand for. That's what a korban is. Korban is for Baalei Tshuva to do tshuva. So we specifically shecht it in the north to show us where and how we do tshuva in Shemayim, what happens to us in Shemayim. That's the idea over here. But then there's a Maral Diskin. Brilliant. Maral Diskin says there's a Tanit of Elio that says the reason why we shecht the Korban in the north is to remind us of the Isle of Avram Avinu. The Ram of Avram Avinu. We all know what happened. Avram Avinu was doing the Akedah. He was told not to. He's sitting there and he doesn't know what to do. And then he sees an Isle, a ram caught basvach in the bushes, bikarnav, with its horns. He takes the isle and brings it as a korban instead of Yitzchak, his son. He brings it instead of Yitzchak. Says the Tanit of Elio, this is written based on Elio Anavi. Says Tanit of Elio, he says that we shecht in the north to remind us of the Isle of Avram Avinu. So why does that remind us? Why does the north remind you of the Isle of Avram Avinu? Was the Isle of Avram Avinu in the north? Does anybody see that anywhere? Is that a pasuk? Is that a medrash? That the Isle was in the north and he went there? How would we know that? Where does that come from? That's number one. Number two, why does it say the Isle of Abraham and not the Akedah? Shouldn't it say it reminds us of the Akedah's Yitzchak? Who cares about the Isle of Abraham? The Isle that was brought in the place of Yitzchak. It should be instead of the Akedah. This is the Maril Diskin's question, Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin's question. Listen to his answer. Most amazing answer. Originally, they used to shecht the korban on the Mizbeach. They used to take the korban, tie it onto the Mizbeach, and shecht it there. And then after they shechted it, they would check it to make sure it was kosher, and then they would burn it on the Mizbeach itself. Not outside where you shecht it on the ground, and then you check it there, and then you bring it up to the Mizbeach, like you had in the Beis HaMikdash. Originally, they brought it on, they shechted it on the Mizbeach itself. And that makes sense. What did they do with Yitzchak? We all know it's a Kedas Yitzchak. What does that Kedah mean? What does the actual word Akedah mean? The binding of Yitzchak. Where did he bind him to? Where was he bound to? He was tied to the Mizbeach. Why? Because they used to shecht on top of the Mizbeach. The whole plan was to bind him onto the Mizbeach. He was tied right down over here, and he was going to shecht him on the Mizbeach itself. Not on the ground, on the Mizbeach. And then he was told not to. So here's what happened. He sees the aisle. And what should he have done? He should have untied Yitzchak, right? Taken Yitzchak off, take the aisle, tie it onto the Mizbeach, and shech down the Mizbeach. But he didn't. Because he was too afraid that he had so many nerves. He was so nervous. He was so worried about himself. He didn't untie Yitzchak for fear that he would passel the shechita of the aisle, and he would still need to shecht Yitzchak. Because if he didn't have an aisle to take his place, then he might have to still shecht Yitzchak. So he left Yitzchak in its place, took the aisle, brought it to the north side of the Mizbeach, and shechted the aisle in that area.
Brought it to the north side.
No, he couldn't because it was in Tzfach. So brought it to the north side, put it down at the north side of the Mizbeach, shechted it there, saw that it was kosher, untied Yitzchak, and then brought the aisle on top. And that's when the minig became that you don't shecht on top of the Mizbeach, you shecht down below. You shecht down below, and then you bring it up to the Mizbeach itself. That was the pshat. That's when it changed right there. So every time you sacrifice a korban, not on the Mizbeach, when you sacrifice it on the side of the Mizbeach, in the north of the Mizbeach, when you do that, God is reminded of the Akedah Yitzchak. Not the Akedah, really. The aisle that took the place of Yitzchak. Because the aisle was the first korban to be brought, not shechted on top of the Mizbeach itself, all for the love that Avraham Avinu had for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So every time, this is what it refers to. I think the Sfasema says this as well, but it's the same basic idea. But that's one. Rav Moshe Feinstein says another connection, which is also brilliant. It's like, that was the Maral Diskin. I thought that was like the craziest shot. Then Rav Moshe Feinstein says something, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know what happened with Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu not only did the Akedah. Where was Avraham Avinu when the Akedah was happening? Where was he? On what mountain was he on? Har Moriah. What's on Har Moriah? The Beis HaMikdash, right? Here's the pshat. Avraham Avinu pictured in his head, said Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same way that we do. Before you start Shemona Esrei, you have a chiyuv to picture yourself as if you're in front of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what you're supposed to do. I actually have a picture in my siddur of what the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to look like, and I turn to it and I look. The Mishnah Berurah says you should look outside and see the sky, the blue sky, to remind yourself before you start your Shemona Esrei. Says it's still brought down that you should look at the Beis HaMikdash, see what the Beis HaMikdash is like, and imagine yourself davening, not to the Kotel, the other side, the Dome of the Rock side, without the dome, but to the rock, where the rock is. To go ahead and daven, thinking of the Beis HaMikdash itself, to imagine that. When Avraham Avinu did the Akedah, to him, this is a Shemona Esrei. To him, this was his davening. This was his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we don't fully understand. But that was Avraham Avinu. He took Yitzchak, put him down on the Mizbeach in the north of where the Mizbeach eventually would be. He pictured the Heichal, pictured where the Beis HaMikdash is, Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Aron was going to be, pictured where the Mizbeach HaOla was going to be, and pictured where they would shecht in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and he put Yitzchak there, on the Mizbeach, granted. But he put him there, in the north of where the regular Mizbeach would be. So because he pictured it, and he had it right there in front of him, he was able to see everything. Every time we shecht in the north, God is reminded of Akedas Yitzchak. He's reminded of what Avraham Avinu did that first time he was able to see it. And this is the brilliance. Mida keneged mida. Avraham Avinu saw himself as if he was in the Beis HaMikdash, as if he was sacrificing the Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'll see it as if you shechted Yitzchak, even though you didn't. You're seeing the Beis HaMikdash, even though it's not there. I'm seeing the Akedas Yitzchak, even though it never happened. That is so brilliant. It's such a great shot. Like, that's exactly what happened. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu went back on it. It's not that he changed his mind. He saw the Akedah happen. Mida k'nei mida, because Avraham Avinu saw the Beis HaMikdash. Saw it with his very own eyes. It's brilliant. I feel that that's one of the best. Those two pshatim right there are just absolutely unbelievable. We're going to end with this Chiddush HaRim. The Gera Rebbe, first Gera Rebbe says, this pasuk tells us what to do when in the midst of heavy sin. Listen, some of us find ourselves in a situation where it's bad. It's bad. And I don't know how to get myself out of it. I don't know what to do. This is a really, really bad situation. I shouldn't have gotten here. I shouldn't have been here. I knew I should have stayed out. I knew. But I'm here now. Now I'm in this situation. What do I do in order to get out? Says the Kedush Rem, this is what you have to do. He says, Vishokat Oso. You feel that Yitzhar are coming upon us? You have to somehow knock it down. Knock down the legs. And what does it mean? al yerech hamizbeach. When in the midst of that action, even though you think there's nothing I can do to stop, knock it down right there in the middle and say to yourself, no. The way Yosef Etzadik did, when Zleika Ishes Potiphar grabbed his clothing, but Tzuseyu Bibigdo, but Tomer Shechva Yimi, be together with me, he said no. He said no. And according to the Chiddush Arim, right there in that pasuk, he said no three times. That's a skula to stop yourself from sinning. No, no, no. This is another skula, is to hold on to your tzitzis, but the person who's there might not be wearing a tzitzis. So to be careful of that. Say the word no three times. No, no, no. And that's how he was able to get himself out, and he was able to run out. He's able to do it. He says, that's the shalshalas. We all know that, right? The shalshalas that's on that, where he's sitting there and he's wondering what to do. The shalshalas is no, no, no. That's what you're supposed to think of when the shalshalas is said. Says the Chiddush Arim, al yerech hamizbeach. Sit there and do it. And that way, you say to yourself, maybe you're going to say to yourself, maybe you'll say to yourself, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm doing it in a private place. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not going to know. I'm tzafona. I'm in the north, but really tzafun. I'm hidden from Hashem. Hashem will never find out about it. It says, lifnei Hashem. It's right in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he knows all, and it's right there. So the pasuk, v'shochad al sol yerech hamizbeach, you should shech the Yetzer Hara while in the midst of that action, al yerech hamizbeach, while you're doing that action, do it right then. Say no, no, no. Tzafona, even though you think you're hidden, truly you're lifnei Hashem. You're in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Chiddush Arim, that's the thought process that a person should have to get himself out from sin. I can't guarantee you it's going to work. Can't guarantee you. It depends on what sin it is. Right? But to at least think about that, this idea of shechting yourself, getting yourself out, trying to move yourself away from where the chet is taking you, is by far, it's so important. It's to get yourself into another direction. Hopefully that'll work for everybody. So what do we do today? We talked about the concept, why the north. We did the Balaturim, the Rambam, the Ramban, that idea, and the Rabbeinu Bechaya, why the north is the site of Tuma. We spoke out Pshat in Rav Hirsch. We skipped the Rav Avigdor Miller. We said over the Shach, the Ksav Sofer, and the Tferes Yonatan about how it works. We went into the Maril Diskin and Ramosha Feinstein's answer, which I thought were brilliant. Then we skipped the Balaturim over there and the Vayikra Rab and the Tami Dekra, and we went straight into the Chiddush Arim at the end of what we could do as a Remez to keep ourselves away from sin. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a great